We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. Today is Monday, October 5th. I'm Jeff Erickson here with Chris Liss. We are trying something a little different here. We're going to do a little video along with audio for those of you who are on YouTube. So for the dozens of you that are watching, welcome.
Yeah, we used to do Real Man Wood on video for some of them, but Dalton's mug was just so unacceptable to so many people that we had to cancel it. Unfortunately, now the real reason we canceled it is because the content of Real Man Wood was such that I had to edit it very carefully, and it was just too hard to edit two versions, edit the video and the audio. So, but right. this is a more family oriented version. This RotoWire Football Podcast, so it doesn't really need much editing, does it?
Oh, it doesn't require any. I just click, absent anything that we're like, let's get rid of that. I'm not going to get rid of my ums and uhs and exactlys. I just, life's too short for that. It's part of my appeal. I'm just an everyman. I'm not a polished podcaster.
Exactly.
I'm not the type that you'll hear on Sirius and XM with a sound that's not emanating from my mother's basement. No, I am actually broadcasting from my own house. So therefore, I'm a podcaster. And you get me, warts and all.
Yeah. Well, people love you, Jeff. You know, that's what
I'm a lovable scamp. That's right.
They can actually see
when I'm not paying attention. I'm looking up at the game or anything like that, or I'm distracted. So actually, now I'm busted very easily.
Yeah, exactly. Because you're never, you say the same thing I say 20 times a show.
I don't do that as much anymore. I've been working on that. I'm down to five times a show.
I don't call you out on it anymore because I've given up. You've won.
I broke you. Broke you.
I'm just like, broken man. I'm saying some shit.
You now own a dog. You're a broken man. You caved to your daughter and everything.
Yeah. So I'm saying something. He's not listening. He's going to repeat it back to me in a couple of minutes. It's fine. I'm going to let it go.
Yeah. Equanimity. I like it. Yeah,
absolutely.
All right. Big news right off the top. Bill O'Brien fired as GM and head coach and presumably play caller of the Houston Texans.
Yeah, good riddance to that douche. I mean, you know, that dude sucked. He sucked. He sucked at his job. Every time you watch a game, you're like, why are you punting? Why are you doing this? Oh, you're playing the Chiefs. It's 4th and 1 from midfield. It's 7-7 in Arrowhead. Let's go punt. Okay, game over. We never see a lead again. How many times have we been over this with this guy the last 5 years? It's just dumb thing after dumb thing after dumb thing. And now he finally got canned. I mean, anyone, I mean, there's people who are way better at their jobs than he is that have been fired for way less. And it's just, it's ridiculous. You know, he lucked into Deshaun Watson as his QB, made the playoffs, he lucked into JJ Watt as, you know, a historically great defensive lineman, and made the playoffs a couple of years, but good riddance to that guy. Just, there's just no need for it. And I don't care. I'm contrarian. Like, all the analytics people are always like, oh, Gettleman's so bad. Gettleman's not so bad. He signed Blake Martinez and he signed, what's his name? The corner is, James Bradbury, who's just playing amazing for the Giants, and the defensive line looks good. Like, Gettleman, I'm sorry, but like, I just don't see that's just that those analytics guys have a religion. Like, oh, he said he likes to run the ball, or he didn't take a quarterback and took Saquon instead of Darnold or whatever. I don't care about that at all. But with Bill O'Brien, I can't even be contrarian about it. It's like, he just sucks. I've bet on the Texans so many times just to watch that guy piss away a perfectly good drive on a punt. And I'm so happy. I'm happy this guy's gone. And he sounded like he was a dick too to DeAndre Hopkins, you know, like trying to like compare him to Aaron Hernandez or something in their conversation. So I think it's just better just for the viewing experience and the fan experience, and obviously for the Texans, that he's gone.
And, you know, the thing is, he was not the GM that drafted Watson. He was not the GM that drafted Watt or Hopkins, for that matter. He inherited all that. He had his input, but he wasn't the guy that can be, say, like, I brought them all in. It's my credit that I got that. And it's not just the Hopkins trade. It's everything that happened last year. You know, whether, you know, the trade with the Dolphins, where they, you know, gave up a ton to get Kenny Stills and the offensive lineman, whose name is escaping me right now.
Laramie Tunsil.
Yes, Laramie Tunsil. They gave away, what's his name? Clowney as well.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, that, and then they traded away a fourth round pick for Duke Johnson, a running back they never use. And then, you know, in my system, we don't throw to running back. Then why didn't you trade for him?
Right. And then obviously Hopkins for David Johnson. And, you know, a lot of times, like, there are, you know, Antonio Brown sounds like he just lost his mind, you know, maybe too many concussions, or who knows what it was. But, and that's not on the coaches when Tomlin and Belichick and Gruden can't get through to him, and he's wandering around the league, and now he's out of the league and he's harassing people, whatever. That's a different thing. But Hopkins,
he just wanted to get paid. There's nothing wrong with that.
And also, it's on the coach to relate to the player. Like, if your player is the problem, then it's kind of like you're not doing your job. You're not relating to the guy. I mean, obviously, again, there's Antonio Brown situations where it's, you know, sort of beyond a coach's ability. But Hopkins doesn't seem like he's a problem guy. And so when there's friction, it's not just on the player. It's also because the coach didn't handle the situation well. You look at Alvin Kamara, right? Alvin Kamara hadn't been paid. Aaron Jones hasn't been paid, but Kamara hadn't been paid and obviously deserved it and was a big part of the team. But like, they never got into like this sort of animosity, this beef between him and Sean Payton or any of that stuff. And I'm not saying Sean Payton's some great guy or genius, but like, it's just the baseline. Like, you know what I mean? He didn't have a problem with the star player. And when you see that with coaches, sometimes it's not the player that's the problem.
Yeah, right. And there's very few GMs, I mean, coaches that can also double as a GM successfully. Look at Chip Kelly as a huge disaster example of that. You know, everybody fashions themselves as Parcells. Well, I'm going to be the cook. I want to shop for the groceries. Well, you know what? For the most part, you're lousy at shopping for groceries. And then it makes you a bad coach, too. It takes away everything.
It's a hard job, right? The grocery shopping is like maybe harder than the cooking, because if we're going to keep the analogy going, because it's drafting's hard, you know, signing players is hard. You know, they're unpredictable year to year. They get hurt. They age unpredictably. It's just, you know, some of them are more system guys than you realize until they get out of the system. It's difficult. You know, you're talking about, complex systems and like which part of a system is the key part. With the Eagles, when they won the Super Bowl, Carson Wentz wasn't the key part. It turns out. But he was going to win MVP before he got hurt. So it was like, wait, the quarterback's not the MVP level quarterback's not the key part of this system. The second overall pick, that's not the key part. Oh no, actually it's not. Nick Foles just fine in that role. So it's very complex. And then also, you know, if you're like Belichick, you shop for the part, and even if you don't do the greatest job, you work with what you bought. You know, a lot of times, you know, on those like Iron Chef shows, it's like, it's not like, oh no, you get to buy whatever you want. No, they give you the ingredients And you got, I was like, oh, I'll go on Iron Chef. I'll crush that. And I think Heather was like, no, no, you got to cook something very specific. Like, they give you specific things. You can't just cook what you're good at. They give you something and you got to make something.
You'll go on Iron Chef.
Yeah, I'll go on Iron Chef. I'll crush those. I'll beat anyone on this channel. I will beat anyone on this channel. That's not the channel. I'm not an XM. But I tell you, I'll beat anyone in the fantasy industry. But the point is, I was like, oh, I'll do that. She's like, no, you won't do that. They'll give you like lobster and like, they'll give you like, sea urchin, and you'll have to make that. You don't know how to make that. You have no idea what the hell that is. So that is part of the skill, is like, once the groceries are gotten, you don't really know what you got. It's kind of like mystery groceries. And then you got to cook with them. And Belichick will cook with the random shit that he's got. So hopefully he's got some good ingredients, but he makes do. And, you know, a lot of coaches too, like, they, if they don't have the exact right setup, it's like they can't, they're not good. And so it's just, to do both tasks at once is a huge responsibility. You got to be very disciplined, organized. And like, Bill O'Brien shouldn't be doing either task. And then he's tasked with both. And, you know, you know what the surprising things about Bill O'Brien is, that they made the playoffs so often.
Yeah, it has to be that he's got a core competency there, that he has to be pretty good at coaching to a certain extent, wouldn't you think?
He's got to be doing something right. Although, you know, I thought Joe Torre was a crap manager, but he just happened to be in the right place at the right time. I guess football is more involved than baseball. Like, anybody can manage a baseball team full of stars that gets along. I don't know. He must do something, right? He must do something. Maybe he is a leader of men in his own way. But, he's definitely not splitting the atom. And I don't know. I just, better for the league. I don't need everyone to be an analytics dork. I really don't care about that. I'm not one of those people. But I do want people, you know, just to learn from errors, not do things that are, you know, it's one thing to go for two down 15 on the first score, or especially go for two down 14, which I think Mike McCarthy did, which was smart. But go for two down 14. If you don't do that, I think that's less troubling to me than if you're still, that's like the new, okay, now coaches are realizing this is optimal and you can easily show it. I'm going to show it in my column tomorrow. But punting on fourth and one in plus territory against the Chiefs, that's like the 101 course, that if you didn't learn that, it's, I don't know what to say.
Right. And when he did it previously in the playoffs, multiple times, you know, losing to the Pats. Remember, they had the Pats on the ropes, and then he did his little fourth down punt in the fourth quarter when they were close and it's still viable. And then he did that like two different years. He did that, and it was almost like the undercover, you know, Belichick assistant, you know, let's just hand the game to him sort of thing there. And it didn't learn from that at all. So off with his head. Basically. Yeah. So what does this mean for the Texans? What meaningful change do you think we'll see?
Well, I don't know, because it depends who's in charge and
what Crennel right now.
Who is it? Oh, Romeo Crennel, another Belichick guy, ex-defensive guy. And he's interim a defensive coach, guy. But he's not going to matter for the offense. Who's the coordinator? Who's taking over calling plays? That's the question.
Yeah, that is the question. And I don't know who that's going to be. I think it's just him that got fired right now. I'm going to look and see, though, who's on the coaching staff, see if there's anything else that we can learn from that. But
do this in real time and search for it. Because to me, that's the that's the bigger story, right? Because Crennel's not calling plays. He's a defensive guy. He's going to delegate that to somebody.
Presumably the offensive coordinator, right?
Yeah, if he's still there. Now, O'Brien wasn't calling plays, right? He was making down the distance.
He just took over calling plays. That's the funny thing. Like, this week was the first time, I think, that he started calling plays himself. And clearly that was not
something. You know what? Pull up Mario's article. Mario did all the you know, the coaches and coordinators.
Yeah.
I'm going to pull this up because I'll get it. I mean,
you do
I
that one. The offensive coordinator was Tim Kelly, who also is the quarterback's coach, too.
Okay.
That's so who I would assume would be the guy.
I don't know what his tendency is, but I don't know what his tendency is, really. Like, what if this guy's got some special tendency? All right, I'm looking at this. This is from February, and we've got the Texans, O'Brien. Oh, he had O'Brien as the offensive coordinator at the time. Well, so that's not going to help me.
No, it's not. But anyways, you know, it's a big change. maybe that means a different philosophy on, you know, fourth down and things of that nature. That could absolutely be the case. We'll see. But he's out. This is the first game that the Titans were favored to win, by the way. They were big underdogs in their first three games, at Kansas City, home against Baltimore, at Pittsburgh. So a lot, I've seen this line of defense. Oh, look at that schedule. And they included the Vikings as a hard one. But, you know, the Vikings.
Vikings were 0-3 coming in,
yeah,
and just lost at home to the Titans. Yeah, the Vikings may be a league average team, it'll turn out, but I don't think it's a hard game. And it's just, again, like if he were making amazing, you know, if they had lost Deshaun Watson to an injury, if J.J. Watt had been out two games or something, if there had been some undue hardship that they had been dealing with, then you could maybe cut him slack. But there's, you know, they're not, and they're not competitive.
Nope.
And against the Vikings, their defense was terrible. I don't know what it's going to be. You'd think, okay, maybe they'll throw more. Maybe they'll let Watson cook, you know, let Deshaun cook, just like let Russ cook. Stop, you know, forcing the ball in handoffs, throw to Duke and David Johnson a lot, and just open it up. It's possible, but I don't know what the offensive coordinator's tendency is.
No, I don't either.
It won't be worse. I'll promise you that.
Yeah, I'd agree with you on that. Okay, other big news. No Davante Adams tonight. No Sony Michel. One of those is not like the others. They will be activating Damian Harris in the first Monday night game. You know, the Pats backfield remains a mess. Still, you know, not anybody you really want to start on a regular basis, even though if you started, either of the top two backs last week, then you did quite well. But I don't really see that as being a big option week after week, even though it's like some of the personnel has changed.
Yeah. I just think the backs are going to be A, hard to predict, and B, the division of labor is going to go against you usually. Burkhead was an exception, had a monster day when they just ran it only and they faced the Raiders, who were kind of soft. But James White's back. That was also because James White had a tragedy, and so he was away. That was just a fluke thing that you know, he's going to be back taking those particular carries, those particular role, the third down role. And then you've got probably Burkhead on the early down carries. I don't think they're going to activate Harris and give him a major role. I could be wrong about that. Sony Michel's on IR now. And then Cam Newton gets the goal line work a lot. So you've got a goal line back, a pass catching back, a quasi goal line back in Burkhead, who's also a quasi pass catching back. And then you've got whatever's left with Harris. And who's that rookie they had? JJ something. What's his name? There was that rookie that I picked him up in the Dynasty League.
Oh, yeah. JJ Taylor.
JJ Taylor, yeah. He's there too. So.
Right. And I didn't even realize at first that Michelle went straight to the IR. So he's out at least three games. So that's a big deal. It means, frankly, he's a cut right now because he's a guy that you don't feel great starting anyhow.
I started him last week and he had 100 yards, so I was happy about that. But it was desperation, 14-team league with a lot of spots. But yeah, I would, you know, now that he's on IR, I'll just put him there, so it's no big deal. But yeah, he's a cut in the league where, like in an NFFC, cut him without conscience.
Yeah, in leagues that you don't have an IR slot, I think you have to go that route. No Adams, no Davante Adams in the night game. They're both night games. The later of the two games, Packers and Falcons. It looks like Julio will play and Calvin Ridley will play. So that's a big deal there. But still, they're going to be compromised in this game, perhaps.
I'm a little nervous because I had the Packers and Survivor. And worst case scenario is Ridley, Gage, Jones play. Adams doesn't. Lazard's on IR. So like this all. It's kind of like went the wrong way for me, but I don't think MVS is up to the task of getting 12 targets and having a huge day. I hope I'm wrong. He seems like he's not really a football player. He's like an Evan Ingram was a first round pick by the Giants, so he's in a lot, but he's just a big fast guy. And it's like, he's not like he just doesn't deliver really, you know? And I think MVS 6'4", 206 runs like a 4.3 something. And he should be, you know, like, I don't know, like DJ Chark. He runs a 4.37. He should be like a DJ Chark type, but he just doesn't have the football skills. And he's just something's up. He's already 25, which isn't that young for, you know, prospect. So I'm going to bet against him. I think Aaron Jones does something. I think one of these scrubs that we don't know about, Darius Shepherd or Malik Taylor, one of those guys, Robert Tonyan, tight end, Jay Sternberger. Someone makes a play for them there, but I don't think it's going to. I think Valdez-Scantley will go like 4 for 96 or something like that. But he's not going to take over the way people would hope if you picked him up.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why a guy with his size and speed went all, dropped all the way to the fifth round of the draft.
Yeah, that's what we're really – that's what we're talking about. You know, we talked about that idea that the better – the more athletic the guy is, the worse of a football player he is in the same round, because it means obviously if you're taking the same round as somebody else and you're the better athlete, there must be some reason why they got, you know, considered, why they were considered as good as you.
Right.
And it's probably because they're better at football. You're better in the, you know, the training camp, the underwear Olympics, and they're better at the skills. And it was Scott Barrett or somebody did a study. He looked at it, or maybe it was this guy, Adam Harstead, who he works with or something, did a study and showed that, like, if you, like, you know, adjust for round, because round, you know, entails opportunity also. You can't say, well, fifth rounder is better than the first rounder, because the first rounder is going to get a lot of chances.
Right.
But the less athletic the guy was, the better he did, I think, you know, because and you think the reverse would be true, but it's like, oh, well, he was only a second rounder because he's really good.
Yeah, that's right. I think that whole theory is accurate. I'm looking at his metrics. Like, he is a 4.37 at the combine in the 40.
Yeah, he's 6 foot four, Jeff. He's 2'10". It's like, that's like Randy Moss, DJ Chark, AJ Green. Yeah. Actually, AJ Green is not even quite that fast, I don't think. That's like that kind of.
It certainly isn't
tall,
anymore.
Thin, yeah. Tall. Well, yeah, he's like 4'8 right now. But like tall, thin, rangy, go up and catch anything. I mean, that's the build of, you know, some archetypal superstar historic receivers. And you know, he's had long enough that it's not him.
Right. That's right.
You never know. I want to say you never know. It could be a psychological thing and he get over it and he's great. But even psychological things are just as hard to cure as physical things sometimes.
Well, and the thing is, it is telling that he wasn't able to shake coverage last week with Adams out. One catch, 5 yards in 4 targets. And he said something to the effect of, well, now I see what Devontae's looking at every week. Like, he was elevating himself to that role almost. It was like, yeah, you probably saw tougher coverage, but because I don't think Lattimore was hurt during that game, but
right.
Yeah, I don't think Adams would have been shut down that the same degree. Let's not equate ourselves here. But yeah, it's like the old joke, Hank and Tommy Aaron combined for X number of homers, and all, you know, it's always that. Yeah, it's the second guy. Oh, well, me and Devontae combined for this number of targets and catches. Give me a quick prediction on the two Monday night games. That'll be nice and stale by the time people listen into and or watch this.
Yeah, or I'll get the number exactly right, and they'll accuse us of doctoring the timeline of this.
I never edit. Don't hit. It's safe.
Yeah, so I got to look at beating the book. I got to actually look up my exact number because I want to be true to it. I am a little nervous about the survivor pick because, again, like it all went against me in terms of the guys who are playing. I had 35-24 Packers.
Okay. Okay, and what about the Chiefs? Chiefs Pats.
Well, the prediction I made was with Newton. It was 29-24.
Okay. Tell me what
Chiefs.
You would be you make it now, because yeah, we kind of did gloss over that whole Hoyer.
I'll go 29-20.
Okay.
Chiefs, 29-20.
All right. And you did do force the bet money line pre-cam COVID test on me on that one there. But
you're lucky that it locked in when it did, because it would be a lot bigger now. The money.
Yeah, line. That's right. That's right. And I'll tell you what, you probably find pretty good odds. Yeah, in fact, I'm intrigued. I got to look it up now and see what odds you would be getting now with our, you know, unique system of stripping out the VIG too. So money line is Chiefs minus 660, Pats plus 480. That's what, 1140 total?
570.
So 570. Whew. You could have reached payout with one win.
I know. Yeah, I wish. That'd be a fun free roll to have tonight, but fortunately I still get like $46 or something like that.
Right. Well, the thing is, yeah, you're already ahead the $10 because I picked the Lions, and for about 5 minutes I was looking good. It was 14-0 after 5 minutes of game time, and then all of a sudden, 35 consecutive points later, not unanswered. That's an announcer pet peeve of mine, by the way. Yeah. Unanswered versus consecutive. It's consecutive. If the game's over, you can say unanswered, but it's consecutive.
Right. You could say not yet answered.
Yes. But
35, not yet answered.
Yeah.
But consecutive is a little more economical, I would say.
Yeah, it's correct. also. Yeah. It has the advantage of being correct. All right, before we move on with other big news and other banter, quick note from Prediction Strike. Prediction Strike is a fantasy sports stock market on which you can buy and sell shares of professional athletes as if they were stocks. Ever heard someone say, "I've had stock in this player since day one"? Well, now Prediction Strike makes that a real possibility. You had stock in Patrick Mahomes' rookie year? You knew this would happen? Now it's a reality. Create a portfolio of all your favorite athletes and get closer to the game than ever before. To get started, simply visit PredictionStrike.com to create an account. Then deposit funds to buy, sell, and hold shares of your favorite players, just like you would real stocks. Each game is like an earnings report. If the player beats his projection, his stock moves up. It's that easy. You can trade your shares of players at any time, as long as the player isn't currently in a game. Get started today by visiting PredictionStrike.com and sign up with code ROTOWIRE to get an additional $10 with your first deposit of $20 or more. We saw two big injury, running back injuries this week, Chris. You, one affects you directly, one does not at all. The first being Nick Chubb, out 6 weeks minimum with the sprained, well, not minimum, but estimated 6 weeks with the sprained MCL, already placed on IR by the Browns.
Yeah, Chubb, I thought he was just the floor pick of the year. You know, second round, was going to get 300 carries and, you know, 14 touchdowns, 13 touchdowns. 1,400 yards, just total beast. He wasn't going to catch a lot. He's going to get 20 catches or something probably, but he was going to be basically Derrick Henry for a second round price. And he was doing it, right? He had four touchdowns, basically three games, and he was getting 100 yards a game. He was on pace for all that. And just bad luck. MCLs usually are like 4 to 6 weeks. So I'm surprised they said six. You know, maybe it's a more severe sprain. You know, we talked to Stefania Bell. She's always like, there's degrees. So right. Maybe you got like a second degree or a severe second degree. But MCL is not ACL.
Right. So and if it's Chris Carson, you miss 0 weeks. But that was one thing Stefania also said is, you know, I need to know like where in the MCL was it? Where, you know, where exactly was the injury? What was it exactly? What sort of tear there was? And she could be more, and the teams are never going to reveal that, of course. But when you do have that sort of information, it's a big deal. That's one thing. The other, too, is, you know, looking at Chubb, you know, misses out on this monster game. He was 6 for 43 before the injury.
Oh, he's going to go crazy. He's going to get 200 yards and three touchdowns.
Dallas is terrible when it comes to stopping the run or anything, stopping anything, really. They face the Colts and the Steelers the next 2 weeks. Those are two good teams against the run. So, you know, Kareem Hunt's going to obviously take a big upgrade in stock. And then also, you know, De'Ernest Johnson, Dontrell Hilliard are going to be pickups this week. Johnson had a pretty big game last week against the Cowboys, or yesterday against the Cowboys. But, you know, you step into a pretty much tougher matchups here.
Yeah. Their offensive line's pretty good now, run blocking, but it will be tougher going. And if he was gonna, it sucks that he got hurt in the first quarter. But it, you know, if he's gonna miss a couple of games, you know, it's against the tougher competition. And then hopefully, you know, he beats the timetable. But as Pianowski always says, never get optimistic about injury timetables. It just sounds like a lot, like 6 weeks, like right out of the gate for an MCL, but. You know, they know more than I do.
It was framed, though, as, you know, the first thing I heard is, oh, it's not going to end his year. Oh, you were thinking about that. You know, that was the framework that caught my eye.
Part of it's the IR. The IR is kind of annoying me. Like, when you're on IR, it used to be you're out for the year. That was it.
And or there's one person that could return.
Right. But that was the second. Initially, you're out for the year. Then they added the one person that could return. And it was like after like week 9 or something. You had like a window to practice and get going. And now it's like this three-week free-for-all where IR doesn't really – it means he's not playing the next couple of weeks, but it doesn't mean he could be out for the year or he could be out temporarily. And you don't know. You don't know to cut him yet because, you know, so you're just going by the stuff. This is just – I don't know. Chubb is 20 – how old is he? He's born in 95. He's 24 right now. So I think he's young enough. I don't know. I'm going to get optimistic in a week, you know. Just hold on to him, and in week 10, he'll be back and get him back for those fantasy playoffs and, you know, in the NFFC leagues.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of a tough call, but at least in the NFFC, you got 10-man benches.
Yeah, you're not going to drop him.
Right. And then hopefully, like your other leagues, you get IR spots, and so you can hold on like I do in Yahoo. So at least I'll have a chance there to kind of get those guys back. Other huge one, Austin Eckler, out 4 to 6 weeks. He's got a hamstring injury and a hyperextended knee. It's a grade 2 hamstring strain. I did see that. They're going to seek a second medical opinion. He is on IR also. So you're looking at least until November. Joshua Kelly and Justin Jackson are going to step in as the next two backs. Kelly lost a fumble. Big play in that loss.
Second fumble he's lost this year also.
And both of them were very impactful too.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I guess, you know, both those guys will get a shot. I want to see if they dump off and who gets the dump offs, because that's where the money is in PPR leagues. And Herbert will check down. And he looks good. Looks like a credible passing attack. I mean, like Mike Davis, I picked him up when I lost Barkley, and he's done what I basically would have been happy with Barkley so far the last couple of weeks. It's like he's really been good.
Oh, he's awesome.
Obviously, McCaffrey's coming back soon.
But not next week. He can't. It was weird because he's on IR. He couldn't anyhow. But they kind of affirmatively said he will not be back in week 5. Okay. Got it.
Well, it's funny.
It sounds like he's close.
They won a couple of games. There's no reason to rush him. And so anyway, I wonder if McCaffrey's going to, you know, get a lighter workload coming off an injury with a viable timeshare guy with him now. But anyway, it's
he should.
Yeah,
they absolutely should, especially with the amount of money they invested in him.
Yeah, and they're 2-2. I mean, they're still contending right now, so they have to give him. You know, they can't just like punt this year. We thought this was a punt year for them, maybe, but it's not. It's not yet. It might turn out to be, but they're 2-2. But yeah, they can mix it up. It's going to make him not quite as valuable, although he's going to be like, he'll turn into Kamara, where he just gets like 100 catches and gets all the easy points. He might not get as many, like, you know, the rough carries. Mike Davis will get those.
Yeah.
But, you know, you wonder if in Los Angeles, whether, you know, Mike Davis not as good as Christian McCaffrey, and Jackson and Kelly aren't as good as Eckler, but maybe they can do what Mike Davis has done and approximate that production, you know, in a low end level.
Yeah, I'll say this. I did the rewatch of that game. In fact, I chose that one as my first one. I wanted to, instead of like going in just in like chronological order and, you know, eating my vegetables first when I did my rewatches, like, I really want to watch this game, you know, see every play. And so I made a point of it. Kelly, I mean, didn't run very well at all between the tackles. Actually, neither of them did. Kelly had 3 for 26 in the passing game. Jackson 2 for 12. They caught each of their targets. So very limited number of targets, but this is also where the Chargers didn't have the ball that much. Remember, they had the pick six. So in the first quarter, it was pretty much like 3 drives to 1 and a couple of long drives for the Bucs. Then they had a couple of big plays. And so they didn't have much. They didn't have this like the grinded out sort of thing. They hit on big plays, or they did very little. They had the fumble to start a drive at the end of the second quarter that led to the Bucs getting that second touchdown. That was on Kelly. That was pretty bad. And, you know, that was a huge game-changing play. It was 24-7. They could have gone into the half at that instead.
24-14. Oh, I remember that. That was terrible. Terrible.
Horrible.
He just blew it. They just blew it 24-7. I mean, that would have been a dominant lead, and it was 24-14. It's like a game all of a sudden.
Yeah. And then they went 3 and out to start the third quarter, 2 running plays up the middle, and then a sack. And so they barely had the ball then. And their defense got gassed. That's pretty much what happened in this game. You know, Brady did well, for the most part. And, you know, I think the defense just got worn out. Huge swing of events there. And then 9 minutes left in the game, Anthony Lynn had another bad punt. You know, it wasn't a horrific punt, but 4th and 1 from their own 34, 9 minutes left. They ran 2 offensive plays after that punt because the Pats had this long grinded out drive to get a field goal. Rojo got a lot of carries during that drive. So even though he was kind of replaced somewhat in the passing game, he had 3 drops, two of which that counted.
But he got 9 targets.
Yeah, and he got targeted after some of his drops too. But he ran the ball phenomenally well. They just grinded up so much clock. Brady, the pro they was, they're up 35-31. They took that play clock down to 5 seconds almost every time. You know, it was just boom, boom, boom. And next thing you know, they're down touchdown with less than 2 minutes left. Herbert throws an interception under pressure, the one mistake he makes all game. And meanwhile, Anthony Lynn's already saying he's not promising that Herbert will be the starter this week. You know, they really kind of set on this, you don't lose your job to an injury sort of thing.
I think he's going to die on that hill, and he's going to die. He's going to lose his job if that happens. Because the Chargers, how many? They have one win against the Bengals so far, and that win was a very lucky win where AJ Green should have had a touchdown and then the missed field goal. They could easily be 0-4.
They could easily be 4-0, though, too. That's the funny thing. They connect on that lateral, on the hook and ladder, they win.
The Chiefs game, not really.
Chiefs game was an over. They were winning the whole game. They went to overtime. Yeah, they go for it on fourth down and overtime. Who knows? Maybe right.
Yeah, that could be.
They're competitive in every single game. That's my point.
Yeah. But they're okay. So that's fair. That's a fair point. So they are what they are. They're 1-3. They could go on either way.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you draft a guy sixth overall, and you totally botch who he is. You think, oh, he's not nearly ready. Forget about it. Taylor's the starter. Taylor is obviously a stopgap. Tyrod Taylor has been around for 8 years or something like that. And he's barely been in the league the last couple of years. He's barely taken any snaps. And so he's not your future. He's not the guy you're building around. And you know that, obviously. And so you draft a guy with the sixth pick in the draft. And you don't even realize that this guy who you drafted is really good. But why'd you draft him? I don't know. You know, and the rookie, you know, contract, that clock ticks, and you need to get that huge advantage over the rest of the league where you have a competent quarterback at rookie prices and the salary cap room to, you know, expend at other positions. That's how you win. And they weren't even going to see what they had. So they're going to throw that away that first year completely and not really know.
It's like he's a rookie hazer. You know, like there's some coaches that you got to, you know, Mac Patricia seems to be cut out of that school too, where the rookie's got to earn his spot. And, you know, I don't care if my general manager drafted this guy six overall. He's got to earn it. Now let's see what he's got. But
it's like not paying attention to the structure in which you compete in the NFL with the salary structure. And so you got to find out. So not only did he totally miss this guy's talent that they invested in, I mean, the book was, this guy's not nearly ready. So just forget about him. Tyrod Taylor's the guy. Taylor, horrible what happened to him. Totally unfair to him. You know, it's not his fault. Mm-hmm. But you get this guy thrown into the wolves with no prep. You know, he didn't even know until the game started. And he deals for like three games. The guy's been good. He's been really good. He makes nice throws. He's been under pressure against good defense. He's in Tampa, loses Eckler, doesn't have Mike Williams, and puts up 300 yards and 11 yards per attempt against a tough defense on the road without his key guys. I mean, this is a player, or it looks like it. At least we don't know for sure, but it looks like it.
Yeah.
And now you're going to bring back some journeyman placeholder guy because it is unfair. But as I said, Geno Smith got punched in the face, lost his job to Fitzpatrick, and that was it. Geno Smith's career was over. He was a backup for the Giants, never got a shot. He got that one shot when Eli got benched and got McAdoo fired, so I'll always like Geno Smith for that. But he never got a shot. And you know, was that fair that he got punched in the face after he had won the job in camp? No, it's totally unfair. But, you know, unfortunate and sad as that is, you're a football team. Like, you drafted this guy, you're trying to win, you're trying to develop your team for the future. You can't worry. Go sue the doctor, you know, settle with them. That's all legit. Well, but like,
it's funny you mentioned that, because Jake Glazer had a report on the Fox pregame show yesterday, and he was saying, well, one of the things there's some legal liability concerns. A guy loses his job off of a medical mistake like this. You can't do that. You know, it's grounds for, you know, a lawsuit, or grounds, you know, it's grounds for them, you know, finding in favor of Taylor if there's a lawsuit that happens. I wonder what sort of background is it. Is Lynn being instructed by the ownership / front office to say, you know, to say all this and do all this? Does Taylor have to lose the job on the field itself? He might. So
they might be legal telling us. Spanos, like, that guy's so cheap and he moved into L.A., that old thing. So he might be like, oh, wait, how much could this cost? Well, it might cost us 20, 30 mil, you know.
We don't have any fans in the stands. I'm cash poor right now.
Yeah. My ex-wife, you know, is demanding so much money. My redheaded stepchild needs money for college. I can't take it anymore. I had to donate a whole wing to this college to get this guy in, even though he's totally dumb.
Yeah.
But you know, when I donated the wing, now that's costing me. Yeah. You know, these guys have problems. So you're right. It could be that. That would be really funny if poor Anthony Lynn, then he's getting thrown under the bus looking like an idiot for, you know, taking one for the team when ownership is just trying to cover their ass. But
yeah,
stranger things have happened than that. We don't know for sure that that's happening, but, you know, maybe that's a thing.
I've got Herbert in Superflex League, and I dropped Taylor this week, and I might have to go after him again because I'm starting Hoyer, for crying out loud. And I had to trade for Hoyer to do that. I traded Frank Gore, so whatever. Right. But, you know, because I also am waiting for Garoppolo. And, you know, I didn't get Mullins. I'm thankful for that now. But here you are. You know, it's one of those things I'm like, I don't want to have to deal with this.
Yeah, it's annoying. I mean, I think the problem is, okay, so if the owner, I mean, Spanos is despised, right, by his own fan base. But yeah. If this is really why they have to kind of pull strings and get rid of this lawsuit, whoever it is, I would not want to be either Anthony Lynn or the owner, depending on who it is that's calling the shots here on this. If they sit Herbert, the fans are going to go bananas. Whichever ones are left, Josh Ross, whoever else likes the Chargers anymore, they're going to go bananas because it's so obvious this kid is the real thing, and or at least he looks like it, and you got to give him his, you know, experience. And if Tyrod Taylor starts and has a bad game or just has an okay game, but it's just ho-hum, you know, caretaker stuff, whatever fans are left are going to be so pissed.
Yeah, that's right. If it's just one game, I kind of get it. But what if Taylor has a good game? Then all of a sudden you got this conundrum. You've got this, we won. We're 2-0 with Taylor. We're 0-3 with Herbert. Look at the score. You know, right. There's going to be those sort of hot takes. The Bill O'Brien thinking tree.
Yeah, it's a little dangerous. I mean, Taylor's probably okay. It's just he's not the answer. Just move. Once you've found what might be the answer, you just move on and don't look back.
That's right.
That's it. It's over. You know, it's like, come on. You don't if Alex Smith somehow like comes back and starts for the Redskins, like, I mean, the football team comes back and plays all right, like, they're still going to draft a quarterback next year. You know, it's not like you'd be like, oh, that's the solution.
Yeah, that's right. And the thing is, I watched the game. He made one bad throw the entire game. He wasn't missing guys. You know, he threw some dimes, too. Yeah. That long play to Guyton was off his back foot, you know, in traffic, you know, under pressure, and hit it right in stride. The early touchdown to a guy that came off the taxi squad, Johnson, perfect in stride. He hit Allen for some nice plays. Allen made some nice catches, too. You know, point is, he wasn't missing guys. He was on. He was making some good throws.
Smooth, easy motion. You see him throw. He just slings it nice and easy.
Yeah, it's really easy velocity. That's right.
Yeah. It's like Dan Marino style. You know, he just like flips his wrist and the thing zips down the field. I know that's a
Josh Allen has that comp. Too.
Yeah.
Josh Allen had some Allen throws yesterday. It's just like zip. I was like, whoa, he barely exerted himself on that.
Yeah. And Marino used to like flip his wrist and the thing would go, you know, on a beam, like 45 yards on the field.
Mahomes has that obviously too, where it doesn't even look like he's throwing it hard.
Yeah, Mahomes has a cannon, though, for, you know, if he winds up and steps into it. But
that's right. All right, quick note from Stable Duel before we move on. Are you dominating your fantasy football league? Well, now there is another game for you that you need to play. Imagine fantasy for horse racing. Stable Duel is live with daily contests offering thousands of dollars to be won each week. Download the Stable Duel app, create your account, and start selecting your horses today. Compete against other players for winner's circle glory and big money prizes. New to racing? Not to worry. Stable Duel is simple and fun with low level entries and big payouts. Name your stable, select 10 horses within your bankroll, and watch each horse accumulate points depending on where they finish. Invite friends to compete against and show them who dominates at all sports, including the sport of kings. Download the Stable Duel app and build your stable today. Get in the action of Stable Duel. Play. Race, win. Thanks to Stable Duel. At first, when I started reading, I was like, "Stable Genius." No, it's like the horse stable, but you know. So a couple of things I wanted to bring up. First of all, you know how you fast on Mondays?
Yeah,
I'm doing that too now. I decided to try that out. I've been doing that all day today.
I've been eating all day, dude. I'm 8 hours ahead of you, so I'm almost done. I'm going to sleep after this. Wake up and break it. But nice. Good for you, man.
Are you crushing a big breakfast on Tuesday mornings then? Or how do you do that?
Sometimes I like go till noon on Tuesday. I mean, I've gone longer, but typically on Tuesday I'll have I try to fast till noon most days and just drink black coffee. Mm-hmm. And people might find this disgusting, but But this is the thing, you know, Bulletproof Coffee, they put butter. And I put ghee. Ghee is like butter. It's clarified butter. It's Indian. It's really healthy. And you just, it's like cream, but it's, you know, it's cheaper and it's healthier. So I put a big scoop of that in my coffee. So I've just got this pure fat in the black coffee. Tastes delicious. Wakes me up. And then at some point, because I've fasted the day before at like 10 or 11, I may like check out what's in the fridge and I'll eat like a, you know, I'll usually eat like some cheese and or some leftovers, like some Sasha and Heather cooked Monday night, and I'll eat whatever's left over. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I eat, you know, a decent amount. I don't think you want to stuff your face immediately. I think you want to eat what you want. One day is not going to, when I fasted for a week this winter, I realized I couldn't even eat meat. Like I didn't have the enzymes to like eat a steak, even though I wanted a steak.
That's why.
So I had like some vegetable soup. You know, you like lose the, you can't just eat a giant steak after not eating for a week. Like your body can't, you know, loses the capacity. So, but you know, after like 3 or 4 days you get back to normal, but you got to ease into it. But one day I think your stomach could eat pretty much whatever you want.
Do you do like vitamins on the day you're fasting or anything?
No, I do vitamins like during the week, but when I'm fasting, I try not to do anything because I feel like it's fine to do vitamins. It's not going to really screw up your fast as long as you're not taking any calories. But I just feel like why just clean out the system completely? Don't tinker with it too much. The only thing I have is black coffee or like a tea, unsweetened tea, obviously water. So that's it.
Okay. Good to know.
Nice, man. Nice, man. Yeah. It's really good for you. And also, it's cool because you're like hungry, and then by the end of the day, you're kind of like, you kind of enjoy the feeling of being hungry and like feeling really clean.
That I beat it. That's what I want to feel like.
And the next morning, you wake up and you're not that hungry in the morning. Like you're hungry at night, and then you wake up and you forgot that you even fasted. I don't know. I'm maybe adjusted by now, but like you may wake up tomorrow and be like, oh, yeah, I didn't eat. You might feel totally normal and feel good. So good for you, man.
Yeah, trying it. We'll see. And I just read a lot that, you know, it's intermittent fasting is good for you. Eating between 12 and 6 is good for you.
Yeah,
things like that. I don't know how good I'll be at that, but I haven't eaten great lately. You know, had like a daughter's birthday, so of course all the stuff that comes with that. Right. And went out to dinner. Of course we'll order dessert. Sure, why not? Right. Well, okay. I'm going to take a little break from that for a while, and we'll see.
Once a week fasting is so good. First of all, you save money, right? Like you're like getting paid to get healthier and in better shape. Just, it's like a good, it's a good deal. And to appreciate food more when you do eat it. It's like, it's just such a win-win. And all it is a little bit of like, oh, I want to eat. Normally I just grab something, but I'm not doing that. It's like such a minor, when you get used to it, you're like, yeah, I'm hungry, but like such a minor sacrifice.
I think dinner will be the tough part, you know, sitting down with the family while they're eating.
Yeah.
That'll be the tough part. Smelling the food, seeing it. That'll be tricky. But you know, breakfast and lunch is fine. We're usually on our own for that anyhow. So that's like all part, you know. I'm not like changing the routine or anything, but we'll see. Okay, back to football. Couple other things that caught my eye. Well, first of all, we didn't talk Bengals at all on the SiriusXM show today. So gotta talk about that a little bit. They looked pretty good. Joe Mixon finally had a good game. They threw to him 6 targets. Gio Bernard got 0 targets in this game. Now,
Right. Now,
granted, you're playing with a lead. It's a lot different. Go figure. But they also made a change at the offensive line, and I think that mattered too. They put in Alex Redmond at right guard. He was hurt at the beginning of the year. They activated him, and so he was starting at right guard. And, you know, they Billy Price, the guy they took as a center in the first round like 3 years ago, and is now like the backup right guard. He was getting beaten around in the previous games, and I think that was a big difference too.
Yeah, I really like put him back on track for what his projections were. You know, it was like he was so behind. He had Mixon had such a slow start, and now it's like, all right, we didn't know it would all come in 1 week, but he hadn't scored a touchdown of any kind before this week. It's crazy.
Right, early in the game, they got to a sequence went on the one. They got stopped like once, and then they threw the pass to Sample in the end zone and went off the guy's helmet, and Miles Jack outfought him for the ball. That was the only interception Burrow had, and that was all on Sample. You know, that was a bad sample. So
large sample though too.
Yeah.
But the thing is that Burrow looks like the real deal. I mean, the offense is, maybe it's the line, it hasn't been crisp. Like you see like Burrow kind of running for his life, taking hits. He's not like, you know, Justin Herbert looks a little more like, the offense looks a little smoother in Los Angeles than the Bengals, but I don't know if the offensive line gets better and Mixon starts making them have to deal with the run a little bit and be a threat in the passing game, things may open. But I think AJ Green, tell me if you disagree. I thought this before the season, but That's it. It's over for AJ Green.
We have a AJ Green versus Tyler Boyd side bet that I might as well just pay you now. But
a buyout.
Ask for if it's $10, I'll ask for a $9.50 buyout or something. You're right. He looks pretty crispy, and you know he only got one catch, and there was a lot of times where I didn't hear his name. You know, Higgins and Burrow have already formed this bond, and you know, let's face it, Green missed a lot of training camp. I think that's a big deal. But he's not even the biggest loser. There's John Ross has been inactive the last 2 weeks. Right. It's not a great time for former Bengals first round picks.
Trade him to the Eagles for a fourth rounder. So, you know, who says no? Probably the Eagles. But you know, it's like the guy is top. He wasn't a first round pick. He was a top 10 pick. He was like seventh overall.
Yeah. Right?
Something like that. Insane. Or ninth overall. But he was very high pick. And he's one of those guys, like we said, if you're that fast, you may have gotten by without being that good at football.
Right.
You know,
he's been hurt a lot of his career, and I just don't think he's the same guy anymore.
Yeah. I mean,
that's what happens. Beauty fades, speed fades, strength fades, whatever. You have to have the acumen to go along with the physical talent.
And right. Football is not for most humans, NFL football.
Right.
You know, it's like
It's hard.
You may be blessed with 4.22 speed, but your body may not be able to be designed for getting crushed.
Right.
You know, and that's it, you know.
Yeah. So Jacksonville looks like a hot mess, though, too. And it didn't help. They lost C.J. Henderson in this game. They lost Miles Jack in this game. Those are two big injuries. Offensively, their offensive line didn't give Minshew a whole lot of time for the second week in a row. They had 10 days to prepare for this game, too.
Yeah, it was funny. I took the Bengals in beating the book, and I felt a little weird about it. But in the end, I was like, yeah. Jacksonville had that one game against Indy. It was weird. I can't believe I lost in Survivor. Jacksonville against Indy. I mean, Indy looks so much better now, and Jacksonville has lost all their games since. It was just this weird thing.
And Jacksonville looked good against Tennessee, too, though. That was the other thing.
They did look good in week two against Tennessee, and then they looked very bad against the Dolphins, and they didn't look great. I mean, Minshew looked all right, and Chark is a star. I think he's going to be a big-time receiver. But, I mean, he is a big-time receiver.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the Bengals took control of the game in the second half.
Yeah, they did. I was happy to see that. Doug Marrone doesn't know the whole time management thing. You know, so desperate to try. They're down 11, trying to score that touchdown to make it, we got a chance to score a touchdown. It took it all the way down to like 7 seconds, 10 seconds where he finally said, conceded and said, okay, I'll kick the field goal so we can try to get the onside kick. But there was no time left anyhow. It was really bad clock management. I was like, thank you for that. Appreciate you.
Yeah. He's not splitting the atom either.
No, he isn't. He's in that bin of coaches. One of the five worst coaches in the NFL.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So your Giants played good defense. Dimes was really a struggle early, but was moving the ball late and then had that pick at the end of the game.
He was playing okay. The Booth was really on his case for staring down receivers, but he was doing that and also holding the ball too long. His instinct, he can make all the throws. He's a really good athlete. He's tough. He's courageous. He's not afraid to make a mistake. I really like the guy, but maybe the knock on him that if he doesn't succeed is going to be that he just doesn't have the feel for when rushers are around him, and that feel for like looking away the defender and then, you know, throwing back to his receiver after looking off the safety. He doesn't have that touch, that feel. His throws are fine. His accuracy and his arm strength, all that's great. It's just there's something missing with him. But he engineered this drive against the Rams. The Giants defense played great. Those front guys like Dalvin Tomlinson and Leonard Williams, those guys are, you know, that front is tough.
Yeah.
But the problem is that and they lost, you know, they lost a couple guys. They lost Xavier McKinney, who was their early second round safety that was supposedly the best safety in the draft and was going to be their top guy. And I don't know if you can hear this garbage truck in the background. I left the door open, and it's super loud. It's a garbage take. But so the defense should even be better. But, and even when they got blown out, you know, against San Francisco, it held up for a bit. It was a close game. And then, the wheels came off in the second half because the offense simply couldn't move the ball. But this game. Devonta Freeman made some moves, some catches, some runs. Wayne Gallman made some catches and runs. The 26-yard Gallman run, Saquon would have taken to the house. He had a lane, and he's just not fast. They look credible, like the offensive line, the blocking. Golden Tate had some drops. Shepard had an early drop. Ingram just never – I saw one play where he got free and then went out of bounds. It's like a good player, like, tiptoes along the sideline 10 more yards. It's just he doesn't have that, like, that instinct. But
right.
But, you know, they had it, and they had a final drive then after they gave up that one play to Cooper Kupp on a third down that really, you know, gave the Rams an 8-point lead. And they were driving, and Dimes made an incredible escape and a 20-yard run slid. And it was like a second down, and they had a ball like 25-yard line, and he was rolling. And I was like, oh, you could run for another first down. And there's like 40 seconds left. Get out of bounds. You had timeouts. A timeout was no problem. And he freaking throws it, telegraphs it, and the DB made a great break on the ball, an incredible interception. But dude, just come on, just run it. Just run it.
And yeah, so it's frustrating. And again, physical gifts, feel for the game, not always quite there.
Yeah. I mean, he's, you know, the jury's out. I still like him, but if he doesn't improve on that front, get a quarterback next year. I mean, you know, you can't hold on to these guys.
Are you for tanking for Trevor?
No, I think they should try to develop Jones. I think Jones still has the base of being a good quarterback and maybe a very good quarterback. He's always had bad offensive lines. We had injured skill players. But yeah. So don't tank. But like, if they decide in like week 11 that this guy is a basket case and we can't, he's just, there's one, you know, chip missing from his brain that we need, then I wouldn't say tank, but, you know, start getting experimental and having fun with it. But I'd still stick with Daniel. I'd still hope for Daniel Jones to be the guy and just take the best player available.
Yeah, that makes sense. I thought the most interesting part of that, the most interesting story emanating from that game had to be the beef between Golden Tate and Jalen Ramsey, though.
I love that. That's so funny. So they got into a fight. There was some rough play. Apparently Jalen Ramsey, I think this is true, but yeah. This is just what I read, impregnated Golden Tate's sister and then didn't want to have anything to do with it. Oh, twice. Oh, okay. I realized this twice. So he's got two kids. But the thing is, I don't, and I've seen like people comment like, oh, I mean, of course Golden Tate wanted to kick his ass. But it's like, you don't know people's personal relationships. You don't know exactly what's going on there. Like, you can't sit from the outside and say, oh, he did this. Golden Tate, go kill him. Like, because who knows, like, what she's like, what the relationship is. You have no idea.
Golden Tate has some other stuff in his past, too.
Oh, he's done some other things, too. And I don't want to spread rumors, but we could talk about it off the air. But the point is, so these dudes are both, you know, alphas, and they don't take any shit. And, you know, and there's this thing going on, and maybe so Golden Tate. So they got into this brawl after the game, and then apparently it kept going. And then apparently Jalen Ramsey was waiting outside the Giants locker room to keep it going later, which I respect, obviously. And, you know, I tweeted about this, you know, the real man. What can I mean, a real man makes this a multi-generational blood feud. You know, this shouldn't end here.
Right.
Don't let this go, Jeff. Someone does that, this is your grandkids are killing each other,
that's,
you know,
right,
50, 60 years from now over this. This is a serious long-term thing.
Yeah. And meanwhile, the Giants, for their part, said Tate was just defending himself. So I don't know. There'll be no fine for that. So we'll see about what happens with that. Tate also has once stolen, did steal maple leaf buns or whatever, maple buns from a donut shop. I know that was that part was true. I think that was.
Oh, I heard another thing that was way more relevant to this example, but I don't know.
I have heard that too, by the way.
Yeah.
But anyways, so yeah,
we got to call this guy Platinum Tate. This guy is legit.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Auden Tate, Golden Tate. Just remember that.
Yeah.
AU.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you're working on for East Coast offense you want to talk about?
Yeah, I'm realizing that this is the thing we talked about on XM, but this is my big thesis that I'm going to lay out, is that the NFL has changed in the last 5 to 10 years with these quarterback rules. And you know how like the NBA, like the 3-point line was like instituted in the 80s, but like it wasn't until like 10 years ago that the Rockets and Warriors started being like, oh, this thing called the 3-point line where you get 50% more points when you make it. If we just master shooting from beyond there, we can dominate. No, we can just go crazy. Why are we shooting 60, you know, 52% from two when I can shoot 40% from three and it's worth so much more? Okay. It's worth 60%, right? So, wow. But it took a huge lag between the rule change and the optimization of it. And I kind of feel like these quarterback rules where you can't touch the quarterback, can't hit him high, can't let him low. If he slides, you can't hit him. What? Wait a second. It's a whole different world now for quarterbacks. And I think that because of that, mobile quarterbacks are gold now. Like, you know, you had Steve McNair. He was great, but then he got beat up so badly he stopped running much. And Steve Young got concussed like crazy. And Steve Young was still, like, you know, amazing. So was McNair. But they really made you pay for that advantage with you know, they shortened your career and made it really nasty. And so with these new rules, the mobile quarterback is gold. And it doesn't, you know, Lamar Jackson's one example, but it doesn't have to be that. It could be Pat Mahomes, the scrambles Danny Dimes did. Wentz killed the 49ers with scrambles. Burrow's made some good scrambles. Aaron Rodgers has done it. Even that level, you're not paying a price for this whole different option that you have to, even when you lose at the line of scrimmage, to still win the play, which is just so devastating. And the best Breeze or Brady or those guys can do is throw the ball away in a way that skirts the grounding rule. You know, it's so cheap, but they mastered it. And you're like, okay, they lost a down. They didn't take a loss. That's the best those guys can do. Cam Newton, Russell Wilson, these guys, they get gains. They get first downs. They have back-breaking things that extend drives. And I just think that – so you look at the 2018 draft, it's like, oh, Mayfield, Darnold, Rosen, these are the three top prospects in that draft. And when the Bills took Josh Allen, they were mocked for it. They're like, who's this athletic prospect that you're taking? This guy looks right, like a quarterback, like in a poster, but this guy can't actually play quarterback. He's too raw. Lamar Jackson, is he even a quarterback? Well, who are the best two quarterbacks by far from the 2018 class? It's Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson. Get the athlete. If you know, they have a good work ethic like Jackson and Allen, they'll learn enough polish as a passer with their great running skills, and they're two of the, you know, more valuable commodities in the NFL now. And so don't draft the guy you think is, oh, Josh Rosen, look how polished he is. Look how polished Mayfield is. Look how polished Darnold is. No, draft the athlete. I think we're in a paradigm shift at quarterback, and we're seeing it around the league. And if you're not an elite, not even elite, if you're not a competent scrambler that can hurt a defense with your legs, you better be an elite pocket passer, not Derek Carr. Derek Carr's never going to be good enough.
Not Sam Bradford.
Not Sam Bradford, not Derek Carr. I mean, I even think like Stafford, Matt Ryan is like the lower limit of how, and those guys are good quarterbacks, but Stafford, Matt Ryan is the lower limit of the pocket passer. And even Stafford's a little bit mobile actually, but, or he used to be, but that's like the lower, if you're below Matt Ryan, Matt Stafford, forget it. Forget being a pocket passer these days. Move on. It's not good enough. And those guys are really good pocket passers. So, you know, Dak is mobile. All these guys, all the new crop, Wentz is mobile. They're all, Jared Goff is not good enough, in my opinion. He's not good enough to have as your quarterback. Now, if you have a great system and scheme and a good defense, okay, maybe you can get to a Super Bowl. Maybe one day he'll win one if McVay is smart enough. But I would think that Goff is below the floor. I think you need to be, and maybe Goff improves and it becomes Matt Ryan or Stafford. But Ryan Stafford to me is my floor unless you're mobile.
All right. I'm looking forward to seeing the whole article on that one, but I like it. And we talked, like you said, we did talk about it on the show today too. So I think you're right about that. How many times do we see this? Like big statuesque quarterback, you know, Dan McGuire, you know, got to be able
to Brock Osweiler.
Yeah. All right. That's going to wrap it up for today. Thanks everybody for listening and watching for the dozens of you on YouTube. So we appreciate that. Maybe that's
like a million views at some point. Million views on YouTube minimum. I'm pretty sure.
Exactly. That's the floor. Yeah. But, and Joe and Jake will be with us tomorrow. Talking a lot of free agents then. Thanks again for listening. Have a great day.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.